basket would win it. 3 seconds left. Fires down one. Edwards handed the ball. Slaps it on the baseline. Looks for the break in the lane. Tries to find somebody to go to. Underneath. The Bullock.
Oh, man. Watch it. Watch the long pass.
SC McLaughlin to Jacobs in the backcourt. Half court heat.
It's game time. How about that? How about that one? Oh, my goodness.
Providence wins the game. How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
My goodness.
You
got
it. The clock struck midnight.
Welcome to this episode of the Friartown Fanboys Podcast. It's been a little while since we last met here, but a snowy day in the Northeast has allowed Brendan McGare to join me for a little NCAA tournament preview podcast where we discuss Providence's game on Wednesday night in Dayton against USC, a rematch of the call you just heard from last year from John Rook and Joe Hassett on WEI. Of the game-winning basket and unsuccessful buzzer heave by USC, where Providence got their first NCAA tournament win since 1997. The Friars and the Trojans will meet Wednesday night on True TV, tip off approximately 9:10 p.m. Brendan and I welcomed USC beat writer Zach Helfand of the LA Times to discuss Wednesday night's first more matchup out in Dayton. And then Brendan and I discussed the impressive feat for Providence to have four straight NCAA tournament appearances. And we did a little bit more on Wednesday's game from the PC perspective. Hope you enjoy it. Here's our interview with Zach Helfand of the LA Times. All right, and with the first four games imminently upon us, Brendan and I welcome in Zach Helfand of the LA Times. He is the USC beat reporter for the Times. Zach, welcome in, and hope everything's well in Dayton.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So if we could just kind of get your idea, just give us kind of an overview of USC. I don't think a lot of Providence fans watched very many Pac-12 games, period, this year, no less USC. So give us kind of run down USC as a team overall and maybe give us some quick hits on their season.
They are a fairly different team than when Providence saw them last. Last about a year ago in the NCAA tournament. Since from that team, they lost two starters. They lost one of their point guards, Julian Jacobs, and they lost Nikola Jovanovic, their starting forward. And they also lost four reserves, including their sixth man, to transfers. So they're fairly different. This year, they pretty much won every game that you expect them to, with one or two exceptions. And they lost every game that you'd expect them to. With maybe one or two exceptions. They started off the year 14-0. They were 13-0 in the non-conference season. They didn't have too many big challenges in the non-conference season, except their big win was at home against SMU, which looks really good now. And without that win, they would not have been in the tournament. They also beat a decent BYU team at Staples Center in L.A., and they won at Texas A&M on the road. They started off the conference season pretty well. They beat UCLA. That was their big win in the conference. And they lost to teams like Oregon and Arizona. But it was really the end of the conference season that gave them an issue. They had three games in a row against Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona. Two of those were on the road. Those are tough games, and no one really expected them to win, and they didn't. But then the big loss was they lost on the road to Arizona State. They were winning that game big late. It was a lot like the tournament game last year against Providence, except USC actually had a bigger lead and ended up blowing it late on a last-second shot when they missed a lot of free throws and layups and turned the ball over late, pretty much everything that could have gone wrong too. So that was their fourth loss in a row right at the end of the year. That almost knocked them out of the tournament. But they recovered at home with their last home series. They won two and then won one in the tournament, in the Pac-12 tournament, and they were able to sneak in.
Yeah, I watched just before we came on, I watched their last two games from the Pac-12 tournament. Obviously, they beat Washington State and then lost to UCLA. It looks like they are much more – I don't really remember them playing as much zone. It seemed like they played zone quite a bit in those two games, kind of mixing between man and zone. The 2-3 seemed like it was kind of like a 2-3 with a little bit of 3-2. They were pressuring on the wings. Is that something that's new this year, or am I just missing something?
Yeah, so one of the big themes of their season, or one of the big moments of their season was Benny Boatwright, who's probably their best player. He's their leading scorer right now. He's a forward. He's like a six. He's a 6'10" forward who's basically like a guard. He can shoot threes. He can move well. He got hurt at the beginning of the year. He hurt his knee, and he was out. He missed 17 and basically most of the 18th game. So he's been out for the majority of the season. So what that forced USC to do is play four guards, which worked because Boatwright was basically a guard, so they didn't have to change too much offensively. But defensively, they had to figure out something to make their defense work against some bigger teams. So they started going a lot more to this zone. And it started out as kind of just, you know, a makeshift thing. They need to go to it. You know, they'd use it occasionally before, when Boatwright was healthy, but they had to rely on it more just because they had really no other options when they were going against teams with two bigs. And it actually ended up developing into a strength. Against UCLA, in their win against UCLA, UCLA didn't know what to do against it. And that was one of the reasons they ended up winning that game. So now that Boatwright is back, Andy Enfield, USC's coach, prefers to go man-to-man, but they do have this in their back pocket where they could play 2-3 a majority of the game and be fine with it because they've done that for most of the year. And it has been effective at times, at least as a changeup. So it was something that was kind of like, you know, something they needed to do, and now it's become a strength or at least a nice option to have.
Brendan?
Zach, if you don't mind if I jump in. Just, you know, Ed Cooley talked about yesterday at practice from Providence before they left about their three-point shooting at USC. Just how big of a weapon is that for them?
It's big. They haven't been, I guess they've been streaky, let's say. They've been relying on it less as the season has gone on because they've developed their forward, Chimezie Metu, into more of an offensive weapon inside. But for a lot of the season, you could really tell how they were going to do by how they shot. If they were shooting well, they were going to win. And if not, they were going to lose. They were really reliant on it. They have a lot of good outside shooters. I think the one that should worry Providence fans the most is Benny Boatwright, because he's just hard to defend. I think you're probably going to see Emmett Holt, I would think, guarding him. That would probably make the most sense to me. And Boatwright's got 3 inches on him and could kind of take him to the perimeter where he could be a really good shooter. But they've also got guys like Elijah Stewart, their shooting guard, Jaquan Aaron, a wing, and Jonah Matthews, another guard who like to shoot and shoot. You know, they're kind of guys, they'll get it. If they have any sort of luck, they're going to let it go. So USC hasn't had a game recently where they've really been hot shooting three-point-wise, or they haven't had many games recently. So I think if they do get hot, they're really hard to defend because then they have a lot of other weapons that they can go to. But they haven't been recently. If they do start shooting it well early on, I think that's time maybe for Providence fans to get worried. But if not, they aren't the type of team that really loves to go inside a lot.
Yeah, I noticed.
Sorry, Mike.
I noticed when I was watching that UCLA game, they started 3-19 about halfway through the first half, and just seeing some of their other games, seems like slow starts maybe are a bit of a problem. Do you think that's more of a shooting issue, or they just kind of get off the slow starts and pick it up as they go?
It's been a little of everything. The UCLA game was definitely a shooting issue. The game before that against Washington, they trailed for most of the first half. I think they trailed at halftime, too, against a really bad Washington team, which didn't even have Markelle Fultz. That was just they were disinterested in the first half of the game. And I think that's mostly been their problem. I mean, there's been times when they've shot poorly in the beginning of games, but they've fallen behind a lot. It's really been a habit of this team to get behind. I think they have 10 comebacks of 10 points or more this season. I think that's it. It's either 9 or 10. So it's, you know, almost half of their wins have been fairly sizable comebacks. So they're a team that doesn't really panic if they're behind. Really, their issue has been getting ahead late and then collapsing like they did against Arizona State. They did it another time against Arizona State and ended up holding on to win at home. And against Washington, they almost collapsed late in the Pac-12 tournament. So their slow starts have been an issue, but one they've normally been able to get past.
Zach, I just want to ask about Jordan McLaughlin. Just you know, a year ago, he was probably checking Chris Dunn in this game. You know, huge assignment, and I thought he did pretty well guarding against Dunn. How different is it going to be this time guarding a guy like Kyron Cott, right? A little bit smaller, but maybe just as quick as Dunn.
I think he matches up a little bit better against Cartwright. I mean, Cartwright is a very good player, but he's not quite the caliber that Chris Dunn is. And the size. McLaughlin's not the biggest guy USC has. And he's also not even their best defender. Not even the best defender that's a guard. He's probably the third best defender that's a guard. But I was pretty impressed by him on Dunn last year. He didn't completely shut him down, but Dunn didn't have his greatest game against USC. But I think the matchup against Cartwright is just a little bit better for him, because Cartwright, I think, is only 5'11", right? So I just think size-wise, he matches up better against Cartwright.
What's the vibe you're getting around the USC team, obviously getting another crack to play PC the second year in a row? Is it you know, is it more, you know, we're a different team, they're a different team kind of mentality, or is it, you know, we can get another crack at these guys?
You get a little bit of that, you know, different team, they're a different team, but I think they're mostly excited to have another chance to win or get some, you know, redemption for a game that they felt like they should have won. And really, they should have won. If they guard an inbound pass better and make some free throws late, they win. And Providence played well, but I think USC looks at it as, you know, this is a winnable game that we had at the end that we messed up. So I think they're excited to get another chance at playing Providence. I mean, I think they're just excited to be in right now, because some people were predicting that they weren't. But I think it's kind of a nice cherry on top for them that they get to play Providence. And then if they beat Providence, then no one's going to ask them anymore about, hey, how did you let Rodney Bullock wide open on an inbound pass with a second and a half left? Or why didn't you make any free throws late? Or what happened? So I think, you know, talking to them today at practice, they were excited. And it took them a while to get over that loss from last year. Some of them finally watched tape on that loss for the first time yesterday when they were flying out. They hadn't watched tape after the game last year. So I think they're excited. I think that it's kind of a nice bonus for them to get a chance at Providence again, or at least that's the way they're looking at it.
Now, for you on a personal level, did you pack light or heavy? And then what I mean is you packed enough stuff to go on to Tulsa?
I packed enough stuff to go on to Tulsa. I don't know. I you know, my gut is saying USC probably more likely to win. I think it's the two teams are pretty close to evenly matched. But just in case, I don't want to be left with no clothes in Tulsa. So I did pack several shirts and several pairs of pants.
Yeah, I know Father Shanley, the president of Providence College, told a story a couple of years ago that he had never packed enough clothing to get to Saturday of the Big East tournament, because Providence hadn't been there since 1994. And in 2014, when they won it, he had to go out and buy some clothes for Saturday. So I don't think he doesn't make those kind of same mistakes since Ed Cooley's gotten to town. I just wanted
to ask
you
maybe he was
about,
worried about jinxing it.
Yeah, well, he is a priest, but I'm sure he's also a little superstitious. So I just wanted to ask you, what would be one thing that you would be really worried about, maybe not even necessarily for USC against Providence, but just USC in general? And then what's something that you think is something that they're going to have maybe an advantage over the Friars in this game?
Matchup-wise, I think you're worried about I don't know. I think USC has the athleticism and the versatility to match up with a lot of teams. I mean, I think the guy that you worry about for Providence is Bullock. If he gets going, you worry a little bit. I think not matchup-wise speaking, but I think the thing that worries USC, or certainly USC fans,
the most is if they're in the same situation as they were last year. If they're up by 4 or 5 points in the last 2 or 3 minutes, can USC close it out? I think that's the thing that's going to worry USC, because they haven't really proven they can do it yet. Even as recently as last week, they had trouble closing it out against Washington. And you wonder if they get in that situation again, do they start to panic and say, oh, no, here we go again. So I think more than any one matchup or player, I think that's what worries you. And I forget the other – what was the second part of that question?
What would be something that would be more – something looked at as an advantage against Providence?
I think if they find that they can outrun Providence. I know Providence is fairly athletic. The first time USC played UCLA, the consensus, or at least the perception, was that UCLA was really athletic. And USC is a team that likes to outrun opponents, that thinks they have advantages inside with their forwards, just leaping ability and shot blocking wise. And what they found against UCLA was despite UCLA's perception with Lonzo Ball and getting out and running, USC actually had the better athletes. UCLA had probably its better basketball players, but USC has better athletes. So I think when they find that mismatch where they can outrun teams, they get a lot of confidence, and they start running in transition and getting a lot of – their team that gets a lot of steals and blocks, and they can use that to score a lot of easy points. But they kind of need that confidence first. They kind of need to see that, hey, we have the better athletes on the court. I think that's the thing that they look for matchup-wise is does this team have better athleticism than us, or can we use that to our advantage?
That's it for me. I don't know, Brendan, do you have anything else?
Nope. I think it should be a pretty entertaining game. Maybe not as drama filled as last year's, but definitely one that has the potential to go down to the wire.
If it's as good as last year's game, drama wise, I will be happy. But I'm just happy that I'm on the East Coast. No matter how close it is, unless we go into like 7 overtimes, I won't have to worry about deadline or anything. Like last year, we had the really late game, so we had to worry about that. But it should be a good game, I think.
Yeah, I picked it as a 1-point game, so I think that's 1 point either way. It seems like Vegas agrees. It's in that, it's gotten up to 3, but I think it's settling down. It'll probably be about a 1 or 2-point game by the time they tip tomorrow night.
Who is the favorite? I haven't even looked at the Vegas lines yet because I've been traveling.
It opened as a pick and then went to USC -1, and then yesterday it was -3 a lot for USC, and it's been 2.5 to 2 most of today, I think.
3 seems a little inflated. But 1 or 1.5 or 2 seems like it's on the money.
Yeah. All right. Well, enjoy it. We are stuck in the snow-filled Northeast for the game, but enjoy everything in Dayton, and good luck with your travels.
All right. Stay warm. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks much.
All right. Big thanks to Zach for joining us. That's Zach Helfand from the LA Times. He'll be out in Dayton. You can follow him on Twitter. I think it's at Zach Helfand. He'll be out there for the game on Wednesday night. Brendan and I back here are just going to kind of break it down a little bit, talk a little bit more Providence-specific. One thing we were just talking about off the air, kind of just more of a big-picture thing, that this is now the 4th straight year that Providence has been in the NCAA tournament, something that has never happened in the history of the program. I know that from being picked 9th in Big East Media Day, something that Ed Cooley talked about in his press conference earlier today on Dayton, he mentioned it. I think he was asked about it by Kevin McNamara, and then later, like 3 questions later, mentioned it again. So don't forget we were picked 9th. So it's something that obviously they took with them all year and had that as a chip on their shoulder. But even still, to have a team like St. John's, who was much improved this year, be picked ahead of them in the Big East preseason poll, to now making their 4th straight appearance in the NCAA tournament, it's pretty remarkable.
Oh, unbelievable. Mike, you were there on Big East Media Day, what, 9th place? And, I guess, Ed Cooley's always calling to his belief somebody had to be ninth. And, you look at the roster, subtractions from last year, Ben Bento, Chris Dunn, Junior Lumumba, and just felt that this was going to be a rebuilding year for the Friars. And, Shock of shocks, and Ed Cooley even talked about this today during his press conference out in Dayton, that, you know, they caught some breaks along the way, and, you know, not, you know, we'll say it, you know, the point guard attrition in the Big East at Creighton and Xavier specifically kind of opened the door a little bit for the Friars to creep back into the NCAA discussion and win six in a row, and, you know, obviously not have the best showing in the world in the Big East tournament, but, you know, to be back here 4 years in a row definitely has to be considered, you know, Ed Cooley's best coaching job at Providence, even more so when they won the Big East tournament in 2014 with basically a 6-7-man rotation.
Yeah, I mean, that was almost just like a magical run that you kind of just said, oh, well, you know, they got hot. Bryce Cotton is a great player. But this year, I don't think there's any great players on this team. No offense to any of the current players, but it's interesting to hear Zach talk about Rodney Bullock as the player that USC needs to worry about the most. And if I think of US Providence fans right now coming off of the game the other night in the Madison Square Garden, where Bullock basically didn't show up for the entirety of the game, I don't think that anybody would say that Bullock is the guy that USC has the most worry about. But that's sort of been the whole thing all year. They don't seem to have a guy who is the go-to scorer. They don't seem to have anybody that can take over a game. But they got it done. Cartwright hit shots when they needed to. Lindsey had some big games. Bullock and Emmett Holt had some big second halves during that six-game winning streak. So, you know, definitely a little bit of luck with the injuries, especially with Blewett, getting Xavier without Blewett and Sumner. But they won the games, and they got 10 wins in the league. And you can't take that away from them. 20-win season again for Ed Cooley. I agree. This is his best coaching job by far.
And, you know, here they are. You know, I'm sure there was a little bit of disappointment getting into that play-in game, thinking that they had done enough to get off that quote-unquote cut line. And when you look at Marquette, you know, not being in that situation, Xavier, two teams that, in theory, you finished ahead of seed-wise in the Big East tournament. But still, you know, 4 years in a row, it just shows that the biggest thing for me, Mike, coming into this year is, would there be a step back for this program given the amount of success that we've seen, you know, three straight years in the NCAA tournament, finally winning a game last year, Big East championship? Would this program start to maybe take a step back and go into that rebuilding mode and, you know, have to dig itself out and maybe be another couple, 2 or 3 years before they get back into the NCAA discussion? And, you know, honestly, I was surprised the way the season unfolded, given the six-game winning streak and whatnot. And it just shows that things are continuing to progress in the right direction. And, you know, we could talk about the practice facility that's coming in a couple of years, you know, the recruits, especially the big men that are coming next year, the Friar ties that are out there right now in terms of the guards from the 2018 recruiting class. Do you think things are progressing in the right direction, and this year was not a quote-unquote step back in terms of national prominence and getting back to the big dance?
Yeah, and then they're able to kind of – it's obviously thinking way ahead because everyone's kind of thinking about Wednesday night, but you could take this a step further and you realize that pretty much everybody who is contributing on this team right now should be back next season. And then you add in the guys you mentioned, like you got the Dejor Dickens, who just led his team to the state finals. They fell a little short, but he had an 18-point, 18 rebound game in the semis the game before that. And you got Nate Watson, who's a top 80 recruit, pure power forward, big kid from the D.C., Arlington, Virginia area. And so you got Tyron Cartwright back, who will probably be alongside Edmund Sumner next year as one of the best returning point guards in the Big East. And then you add in Jalen Lindsey, who has gotten more confident, I think, every single day this year. Seeing him put the ball on the deck a little bit more the last couple of weeks, taking some pull-up jumpers. That's not something you saw the first couple of years from him. And then if Rodney Bullock comes back and maybe he sort of gets his head on straight a little bit and realizes this might be his last go-around, you add all that in, and they could be even better next year. And it's scary to think about, but that's sort of where Ed Cooley has this program now, where it's not really rebuilding. You are kind of reloading. It's not the reloading that Kentucky does, but they still are maintaining a program now.
And especially in this Big East this year, like where you saw 7 out of the 10 teams get in, it was a total bear. It's the most, I believe, since the conference reshuffling, and you know, we went to this current 10-team arrangement. So it's hats off to Ed Cooley and his staff and what they've done to you know, have an opportunity to play among the field of 68.
All right, we heard from Zach. We discussed the program and the excitement for getting in for a fourth year. What do you think about the game Wednesday night?
I think it's a toss-up. You know, we talked about the line a little bit, fluctuating, pick 'em, USC by 1.5, 2, 3, you know, maybe back down a little bit. I think it's a complete pick 'em. It's going to be more, I think, a test of the coaching staffs. And I kind of wrote this last week going into the Big East tournament about the job the assistant coaches have to do going into, like, say, the Big East, where it's more of a touch-up kind of job when you're refining about the maybe the games that you played against them, because there are two games worth of tape, and also maybe look at the last five games. This is a totally different animal because you're playing an opponent who that's probably not – that was not on your radar until Sunday night. So it's going to be more, I think, on the coaching staffs to kind of, you know, go through everything, see tendencies, and really kind of discover what's the best way to attack USC. And how much do you kind of lean on that game last year, even though the personnel from both sides has totally changed? Can you glean anything from, you know, just style of what USC likes to do?
Yeah, I mean, watching their UCLA game I watched earlier, they seem to just like to run a lot of pick and roll. Jordan McLaughlin has the ball in his hands a lot, and the other guys kind of just make plays here and there. And then Benny Boatwright is a good shooter, but as Zach kind of said, they've been streaky as a team. And with him missing 17-plus games, you never really know where he is in terms of – we saw that with Ryan Fizikas when he's missing games. You just never really know. So – for me, the key is they have to stop Jordan McLaughlin because he seems to be their catalyst, kind of like Kyron Cartwright is. And Providence fans know if Cartwright doesn't have a good game, most of the time Providence loses. So if McLaughlin is able to get into the lane like he did the other night against UCLA, they came up short in that game, but they came all the way back from 14 down to have a chance in the final couple of minutes. And it was because McLaughlin got into the lane whenever he wanted, and they got the ball moving around to get – Boatwright some looks and Elijah Stewart some looks. So for me, it's the key is stopping McLaughlin. If they can do that, and then you get Kyron Cartwright maybe playing fast but under control, I think Providence has a very good chance to go to Tulsa and play SMU on Friday.
And I don't think – do you think like SMU is – you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but do you think SMU is like one of those oh my God kind of like, you know, teams to face coming out of a quick turnaround like this?
I really don't, and honestly, the stats are all there. I'm sure people have seen them all week about guys who 11 seed teams that win every year. Someone has advanced in the round of 32, and of all the other 11 game, I think that the winner of this game is probably the team that goes to the round of 32. I'm not a big believer in SMU myself, and you know they have a brand new coach. He had a good first year, but he's never been to the NCAA tournament before. A lot of their guys haven't been to the NCAA tournament before. So I know that people are saying they're a little underseeded, but I just don't see SMU being a bear as a six. But again, you got to get through Wednesday night if you're Ed Cooley. But I'm sure that they were not too upset to see a team from the American there versus maybe you get a team from the Big 12 or something like that.
You just mentioned experience, Mike. How much do you think that's a big deal this time of year, you know, especially maybe from a coaching perspective? You know, we were talking yesterday over at practice about URI. This is the first time that they're really going through this as a program, you know, coming back home after a successful run at the Atlantic 10 tournament. And now you have to, like, kind of switch gears almost and, you know, fly out to California to face a Creighton team. How much do you think, you know, Providence, having been there and done that, you know, quote-unquote bought the proverbial T-shirt, plays a factor in, you know, keeping everything trying business as usual, even though you're doing the quote-unquote press conferences on an elevated platform, there's blue all around, you know, the crowds are a lot bigger than maybe you're accustomed to on a typical Wednesday night.
You're referred to by everyone as a student-athlete when, you know, that's kind of a nonsense thing, but they refuse to say player or athlete, just student-athlete.
But I think the experience factor, especially from a coaching staff at Ed Cooley, I think that has to be a little bit of a trump card in his back pocket right here.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. I mean, and he was asked about this in the press conference today, Dayton. I think the fact that this is their fourth year, and for a lot of guys on the team, it's their third year in a row, it's something that it can't hurt you. So they have the advantage over most of the guys on USC, even though some of them were there last year. You know, I think that's this time of year, you see it even in Big East tournament play. The teams that continually advance to Friday and Saturday night are the teams who have very well-prepared coaching staffs who, incidentally, also have experience going to the NCAA tournament almost year in and year out. And they know how to coach in a tournament situation where you have to be ready for whatever comes at you. You just have to kind of make it happen and keep everybody under control and focused for the task in hand. And, you know, it's going to be tough. They got to spin around all day tomorrow. They're not going to tip off probably till close to 9:30. But I think that having done that just recently at the Big East tournament, obviously with not great results, and also the fact that they did it, they've done it almost every year now that they've been in the NCAA tournament, they have a late game. So I'm sure this coaching staff and Ed Cooley is fully prepared for whatever curveballs are going to come their way between now and tip-off.
What's your biggest key, Mike? And maybe I'll go first with this. You know, bottom line, Emmett Hull cannot pick up two fouls in the first, you know, 2-3 minutes. And all of a sudden that changes the dynamic of what you want to do as a PC team. You know, there's been too many games this year, in my opinion, where Emmett Hull has gotten way too quick of foul trouble. And it's kind of forced Khalif Young into the game. And, you know, not taking away from Khalif Young, I think the future is bright for the young big man out of Canada. But, you know, if I'm USC and I look at Khalif Young in the game, what's stopping me from maybe, you know, putting him on the line, kind of doing a hack-a-shack thing? You look, you see he's shooting, you know, not even 40% from the foul line.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Holt, really, it's uncanny. It's not even like he's out there hacking, but he just manages to get two fouls almost every time out there in the first half. For me, I think that's certainly a key, and I would say, just to piggyback off of that, between Bullock, Jalen Lindsey, and Holt, one of those guys needs to get going in the first half. They can't just rely on coming back in the second half. They did that a lot in the 6-game winning streak, and they had success. But to me, the NCAA tournament is a whole different ballgame. You really have to come out, and you don't have to get out to a 15-0 lead, but you can't get behind 15-0, and you can't start shooting yourself into problems. So for me, it's got to be Rodney Bullock. Obviously, would be huge if he showed up in the first half after the disastrous performance he had on Thursday at the Garden. I think he started like 0-for-9 or whatever it was. So if you get Bullock, Lindsey, or Holt going in the first half, and that speaks to what you're saying about the foul trouble. If you can keep Holt out of foul trouble, I do think he matches up well on the offensive end with some of their big men who are a little bit more slow of foot. I think getting these guys going early. One of those guys has 10 points in the first half. I think Providence is in good shape.
Now, you've already done your prediction. You think the Friars are by a point, just like last year?
Yeah, I have 72-71.
Okay. I don't usually do predictions, but I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to go Friars 74-70. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. You know, USC likes to really, get up and down. They like to shoot a lot of threes, and I think, you know, perimeter defense, the Friars, for the most part, have defended the three-point line pretty well. But, you know, like I said, Emmett Hull, he's got to stay out of foul trouble. And somebody, you know, maybe in particular Rodney Bullock, because, you know, Kyra Cartwright has done a very good job, I think, in, like, asserting himself later in games. But they need somebody to kind of take the bull by the horns early on. And Rodney Bullock, I'm sure Ed Cooley has been talking to him about, you know, you can't have another slow start like you did in Madison Square last week, because, you know, it didn't cost the Friars because they still were in good shape heading into the second half. But, you know, you wonder if he had gotten going, would have been more of a different outcome in terms of, you know, Creighton going on their run that they did.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun one. Probably one of the more fun games of the first four. I know starting tonight you got the other 16 and the other 11 game, but I think this could be one of the more competitive. Both teams are pretty evenly matched in terms of size and athleticism and skill. And I think we're in for another heart attack wrenching kind of game for Providence, man.
No, just like last year.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's I think that'll do it for us. Our NCAA tournament first four preview podcast. And I want to thank Zach Helfand again for coming on from the LA Times. And, Brendan, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely, Mike, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully we have another one of these in us maybe next week. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team in. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here.